Good evening, Vancouver. Welcome back to Canucks After Dark for the first time in... Wow, Clay's really close. For the first time in Canucks After Dark history, we are coming to you on the verge of round two for your Vancouver Canucks after knocking off the Nashville Predators in six games, six tight, stressful games, but the Canucks get a win, a 1-0 win in game six in Nashville, thanks to a big shout out from our boy, 23-year-old Latvian Artur Šilovs. And we are going to spend a lot of tonight going over a little bit of that game, but mostly going over what is to come. The Vancouver Canucks, the Edmonton Oilers, the two remaining Canadian teams left in the postseason, the last hope for the 30-plus year drought. As always, joined by my co-host, Canuck Clay. How are you doing tonight, Clay?
Parker, I'm great. I'm great to be back with you. I know you were out of town for a bit. I was out of town for a bit. And this is a series, a season's a first for us, because we keep saying this is the first time that we get to talk about playoff games. This is the first time we get to do this. Now, you're right. This is the first time we get to talk about a second round since we started the show. And I'm here for it. I know the show is going to be big. I know that you and I are both... And probably the best moves we've been in 3 years, when it comes to Canucks, of course. So I'm ready to go. I'm excited. I'm glad we're both back in town and ready to digest this second round series between the two Western Canadian teams.
Absolutely. So you were in Denver finishing off your masters and yes, getting that all sorted. So obviously you weren't in town for this series finale. No, I was out in San Diego for work for game five. I made it back in time for game six, went to the Rogers Arena viewing party, which was stressful to say the least, but fantastic. I mean, for $15, there is no better place to watch a Canucks game than at the rink. Wow. A sold out 19,000-ish seat crowd.
And Parker, do they do everything like it's a home game, like the intro, the U2?
The kid at center ice with a towel. They got the orchestra. Yeah. They got the anthem. Wow. Every goal, Al Murdoch's on the PA with the, like, it is a full, it is as if you're the, like, at one point in the third period, there was like a play like near the net, and I instinctively looked down at the ice. I'm like, nope, nothing's there, and had to go back up to the screen. It was fantastically done by the Canucks. So, and I'm just waiting for them to put every game on sale for the road games against Edmonton, because there's, for $15, it goes to charity. There's no better place to watch road games.
Can you imagine if they did this during the regular season? So all 82 games at Rogers Arena.
It would be tougher. I don't think they'd sell it as well. I think I'd stay home for a few more of those. But for the playoff games where, you know, again, do I care that much about a Thursday night game in Columbus for game 49 of the season? Not so much, right? Maybe but not. When it's when we're talking game six playoff hockey, like, I'll find my way downtown. And
so good.
A big win for Artur Šilovs against the Nashville Predators, single-handedly carrying this team. Hugh Suter, absolutely the most scoring chances, I think, out of anyone in the postseason so far. Two goals to show for it, but it felt all game like he just wasn't going to break through. Yeah, finally does when it matters most. So that was a great feeling.
Wow. So you said the plan then, we'll do a bit of recap review focusing on game six, but really we want to focus on what's ahead. Is that fair to say?
I think so. Yeah. Everyone was there, you know, everyone watched the games, and I know we normally spend a lot of time on recaps, but in a 1-0 game, maybe not a ton to recap. I mean, game five doesn't go the Canucks way. You know, UC Saros was fantastic. There's the whole, like, should they have challenged? Should they not have challenged? All that's in the past.
It is.
Really what I want to talk about is, you know, game six and Rick Tocchet's decision to start Artur Šilovs in game six, because that was a bold move, frankly, and whether or not that's carrying forward into the Edmonton series. And then we can sort of, you know, we didn't get this luxury with the Nashville series. By the time we did our first show, we were past game one.
That's true.
So this would be lovely to sort of focus on the actual Oilers team and say, okay, what are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? What can the Canucks capitalize on going into round two?
No, that's a good way of putting it. You're right. It's so fascinating, just the goaltending thing. And I know we'll be talking about it, kind of referring back to it this entire hour, because that's going to be one of the biggest stories facing, you know, against two of the best players in the world offensively. So, yeah, it's always going to be a story until Demko actually comes back. I think we'd both agree that as soon as Demko comes back, no matter how well she loves or dismiss playing, you put Demko in the net. But who knows? It might not even be this series. It might be game four. It might be game six, seven. Wouldn't it be crazy, Parker, if it's game seven and they put Demko in because he's ready?
That is a stressful thing to think about.
I know, especially
because if this Canucks team makes it a game seven, I have to imagine both goalies are stealing a game here or there. These are going to be two very offensively focused teams. And, you know, looking at it from a Canucks perspective, this is a reset, right? The Canucks had a bunch of games where they struggled to get 20 shots on goal.
Yeah,
and you look at you know, you look at game six, they changed, right? They put up 29 shots. They obviously only scored one. UC Saros was absolutely phenomenal in game six, and it took, you know, a really great play by Pettersson to Besser in front to Suter to get through. I have a good feeling that this Oilers Canucks series is going to be more open. Not necessarily by the Canucks choice. I have to imagine Rick Tocchet is going to be like, hey, I'd love a 2-1 game here. But I don't think that's what we're going to see.
Yeah, I just think, and I know we're kind of bleeding into our preview already, but if you agree with me that Skinner's not as good as Saros and collectively the Oilers blue line's not as good as Nashville's, then I think naturally we're going to score more goals. I actually think we're going to let more goals in too, given who's on the other side. So Parker, I'm ready. And I'm ready for 5-4 games, 4-3 games compared to what we saw last series, which of course we're happy the Canucks won, but let's be honest, they weren't put masterpieces by any stretch of the imagination.
No, they were gritty wins, for sure. They were, you know, honestly, all the credit to Andrew Brunette. I feel like it was for the discrepancy in team quality, and we thought that Demko going out was going to be a bigger difference than it was, but of course, DeSmith had a win, and then Shelov's played a couple of great games. I feel like Nashville really dictated the pace of the first round, right? They said, hey, you know, we don't have the depth down the middle that the Canucks do. We don't have the firepower that the Canucks do, right? They have Philip Forsberg, they got, you know, Ryan O'Reilly, and Lauzon was really, you know, impactful, and obviously Roman Josi is dangerous. But once you get past those guys, you know, it's a lot of depth, and I feel like Nashville really dictated and said, hey, we want to play this style of series where every game is going to be a low-scoring one-goal game. And, you know, variance is going to help us win this series, right? You get these low scoring games where one goal makes all the difference. You can get lucky and score a goal, especially when Thatcher Demko's out. So they sort of went with that game plan. It obviously didn't work for them, but I think just based on the talent level of these two teams, it was about what Nashville could have hoped for in that case.
Yeah, you're right. I think they were willing to grit out the wins because, if you have Saros in net and you guys, you have guys like Lauzon, of course, Josi and McDonough, you're comfortable with playing a very defensive style game. And we talked about how the Canucks certainly had better depth up front in theory than Nashville, but Nashville could play them straight up on D and certainly in goal. So that's exactly, I guess, kind of what we were talking about. That's exactly what happened. And you're right, the Canucks found a way to open it up a little bit. It's funny you mentioned that about Suter getting so many scoring chances. I did not see the first two periods because I was attending my graduation rehearsal dinner. But then in hearing the narrative and talking to my boys tonight who watched the game, they said, yeah, they're basically screaming at Suter for the first two periods because I guess he had about 4 or 5 chances. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, so I tweeted at 6:09 p.m., which was... when did that game start? The 4 o'clock start? That game?
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
4 o'clock here. Yeah.
So that's end of the second period, beginning of the third. Yeah. And I said, Puse Suter score on a high danger chance challenge. Impossible. and like, I think he had 3 or 4 high dangers at that point. And then, of course, I get to. And then what's great is 5 minutes later, I tweet the Breaking Bad gif of Jesse Pinkman saying he can't keep getting away with this because he had another high danger chance that he didn't score on. And then, of course, you know, 30 minutes after that, he scores that goal. And if I say, I never doubted you, which is obviously very true and fair. And look, I can just tell you from a money puck standpoint.
Yep.
If you look at expected goals on all offensive lines in the playoffs so far, so all forward lines, the Suter, Miller, Besser trio is far and away the highest expected goals for out of any forward line in the playoffs so far.
Well, in the entire league.
In the entire league. In 58.8 minutes, they had an expected 4.6 goals for, which, look, 60 minutes of even strength ice time, you're expected to get nearly 5 goals. That's pretty good. and the next closest was Barkov, Reinhardt, and Tarasenko on Florida at 3.8. So almost an entire goal expected more out of that line. But Suter couldn't convert, right? I mean, he does end up scoring late and he gets the 2 goals in the series, but that line was dominant. And of course you take Miller off and Pettersson goes out, makes a nice play and they convert. And Miller had that little quote after the game saying, of course, you know, you take me off the ice and he goes out and scores. but yeah, like this line has been essentially the best forward line in the postseason so far. That's played more than, you know, 20 minutes essentially. Right. Which is fantastic if you're looking at the Canucks here.
Blending topics here, but because it leads me to this, though, I'm really glad you brought up that point. Do you feel at all sorry? Sorry is such a strong, dumb word. Start again. Do you feel bad for Pettersson that he sees Suter? He basically sees Miller get to play with Besser and Suter, like you said, the highest expected goals 5-on-5 in the playoffs, and he's got a guy who skates fast but can't shoot anything, like another guy who's still young and figuring out his way. Like, I'm just wondering if Petey kind of laments, that's the word I was looking for, if Petey laments the fact that Miller has such a much better line than.
If we go into the season and we say, oh, JT Miller has to deal with Pugh Suter on his wing, are we really going there? Like, yeah. Pugh Suter is not Ilya Mikheyev from a skill perspective, right? Ilya Mikheyev is a higher skilled player, but Suter's obviously been more productive. Nils Höglander's got all the skill in the world, and going into the season, Brock Besser couldn't score. So, you know, like, I don't know how he could. He's got two phenomenally skilled players on his line, one that can't finish in Ilya Mikheyev, and Nils Höglander, who was, I think, struggled in round one, but all season, you know, I mean, he led the league in 5-on-5 goals without a power play goal, right? Like 23, 24 goals without, like, all at 5-on-5, which is remarkably impressive. Like, Pettersson's not being dragged down by his line mates in any fashion. Mikheyev is good enough. You know, if you're comparing, Mikheyev to Suter, Mikheyev is the more skilled player, the faster player, just doesn't have finish. And Nils Höglander and Brock Besser, I mean, Brock Besser's got the finish. Nils Höglander's got, you know, the spin in the hands. I don't think JT Miller is in any better of a position necessarily, except for the position that he's, you know, built for himself.
Okay, no, that's fair. That's actually a pretty strong take, and I have time for it. I'm just looking at the stats. So in the regular season, not the playoffs, three of the four line mates that we're talking about are all basically the same production. Höglander, 0.45 points per game, Suter, 0.3 points per game, and Mikheyev, 0.40. So all within 0.05 points per game. So I have time for the argument that those three, at least production-wise, are interchangeable. But then, of course, it's who gets to play with Brock Besser, who is a 0.90 points per game.
Which, what a nice problem to have coming into this year, right? Like, we didn't see that coming. I know, you know, a big topic today, like Halford and Bruss poll question was, who is the MVP of this series for this team? I think Miller, it was between Miller and Besser. I think their sort of consensus was their consensus was Miller, even though Besser obviously had all the goals. To me, I mean, Brock Besser literally stole you game 4. Like, and I think that's enough to me, right? Like, he single-handedly stole a game. So, you know, if you're the Canucks, and I know we're going to preview this this Edmonton series, I know we're already 15 minutes in, but you know, the line combinations are where this gets really interesting going into round 2, right? Because the Canucks have, like we said, 3 guys who could theoretically be top-end centers in the NHL, you know. Obviously, Pettersson's not playing up to his potential. Lindholm's not really either, although he was pretty good in the first round and I think was a difference maker. When you compare that to Edmonton, right? It's like one of these three guys is playing against the Ryan McLeod, Dylan Holloway, and Corey Perry line. That is a nice problem to have. Although, you know, who are you going to put out there to shut out McDavid?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I'm not sure. Also, you heard on Halvard and Bruff, I heard it when I was driving in, that they're flat out calling Petey's line the third line right now. Like they're all it's unanimous for them.
And it's not even up for debate. You look at the ice time in game two or in game six.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, Lindholm was in the 18 plus range. Pettersson was in the 15 range. And of course, the Canucks didn't get a single power play in that game, which does not lend itself to Elias Pettersson's ice time. But at 5-on-5, Lindholm's getting more ice time than Pettersson. Lindholm's a 2C at this point.
Wow. Yeah, and I think you and I, we'd both agree that you'd rather be playing with Josh Van Garland right now than McCabe and Hoglander, despite McCabe and Hoglander's potential. But yeah, fascinating stuff. But that's a good point. That means at least at home, you can dictate one of your three centers, their lines, Miller, Lindholm, and Pettersson. You're right, gets to play against Ryan McLeod. Yeah, good point. Good point.
So let's quickly touch on game six. Game five obviously didn't go the Canucks' way. there was the goal that was probably interference. And I heard, I know Drantz had the take of, even if it's 50-50, you don't make that challenge. And I'm looking at it of, Rick Tocchet is a gambler at heart, right? He had the whole poker controversy, back in the day. Rick Tocchet knows about expected value. It's a pretty simple concept of, what is based on the decision you make, what's your expected outcome? And in theory, if you have an expected value over one, it's the correct decision most of the time, and eventually you'll end up in the black. So the big thing was, look, if that goal ends up being a true 50-50, which is what we were told it was in their eyes, 50% chance that it takes a goal away. That's an expected value of 0.5 goals, right? Half, like 50% of one. The other 50% is that the goal still stands, but they get a power play. However, their power play was, Nashville's power play was clicking at a 10 to 15% range, even over the course of the regular season. The second half of the season was one of the best in the league, around, 25, 27%. It's 50% of that is your expected goals, which is going to be about 0.15 at most, which to me seems like challenging is the right call. Of course, they don't go that route. That goal stands. Nashville ends up winning it by a score of 2-1, which was unfortunate, forcing a game six, forcing the extra travel for the Canucks, which to me was a bigger deal at the time before they had 5 days of rest coming through, which I think really balances that out. And obviously the Canucks go into game six. You were watching this from Denver, I assume, game six?
Yes, the third period of game six. That's correct.
Right. So the first two periods, were pretty even, pretty stressful. The Canucks get a couple, or they get that Brock Besser high stick in the second period, a 4-minute power play for Nashville. Surprised this didn't get reviewed, considering it's double minor. It's sort of an auto review. Besser sort of played the puck in, like braced himself and brought the stick up. Technically he got Lozon up high, but it wasn't really like a high stick in the spirit of a high stick. But the Canucks are to a 4-minute penalty kill, and the Canucks penalty kill was unbelievable all series long. And that was, I think, the turning point in this game for the Canucks. Like, it really cemented that, hey, they are going to grind out, a 1-0 game, regardless of which way it goes. There's not going to be more than that.
I remember heading back to the hotel, Parker, for the third, calling my kids at home who were watching. And I said, tell me what's the biggest thing from the first two periods. And they said tight. And yes, the killing off of the Besser's double minor. So then I get home, watch the game, ended up streaming it when I could have just turned on the hotel TV. Duh. But I saw the Canucks control the first 10 minutes, the Nashville control the next 5 minutes. And then the scrambly last 5 minutes, which we obviously came out on top of. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, from an analytics perspective, it's interesting too. Like, looking at 5-on-5 specifically, first period, 59% expected goals in favor of Nashville. High danger chances were 3-0. Second period, 5-3 high danger chances in favor of Nashville, but expected goals were 50-50. Third period, 56-44 in favor of the Canucks in the expected goals front. High danger chances 5-5. I mean, shots were even throughout the game at 29-28.
Okay.
Frankly, as a whole, at 5-on-5, shots were 28-21. Obviously, Nashville had 9 shots on the power play, which the Canucks didn't get, or 8 shots on the power play, while the Canucks didn't get a single opportunity. you know, the Canucks, it was a really gritty win. And they were the better team, frankly. I mean, expected goals wise at 5-on-5 was purely 50-50. You bring in the power plays, it's 57-42 or 58-42-ish. But the Canucks were the better team in this game. They deserved to win. And it was a true goaltending war. In which, I mean, you know, Elias Pettersson makes a really nice play on the wall, plays it back to Brock Besser. It's the hardest thing for a goalie to save is a pass from behind the net into a one-timer. And that was exactly what the Canucks did. It's how Lindholm scored in game four in overtime. It's exactly what Suter did here on that Besser pass. And it was a weakness of Saros, and the Canucks played that pretty well.
Yeah, a couple of fascinating nuances on that play, Parker. I know you've watched it a few times too, is Sissons had a chance to get the puck up the boards and Petey blocked it. So that was a nice play. Then Petey jumps around a guy and Sissons does not follow Suter to the front of the net. So, and
I think it was, and then it was Bevilier who lost Suter actually.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's good to know. That's good to know. Okay. Then I shouldn't blame Sissons for everything. Well, where does Sissons go on that play then? That's weird.
I don't remember. Okay. I don't remember the highlight, but I remember Bevilier was the problem. Okay. I mean, for the Canucks, it's, you know, Colton Sissons, I mean, tough series, right?
Yeah.
You have the post on the empty net in game four. You have that play that you could have gotten the puck out here in game six and forced overtime.
Yeah.
But you know, this was the first real, like, oh, well, Elias Pettersson had an impact, which isn't ideal, obviously, but, that was big.
Yes. Yes. What numbers were really 21, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're right. You're right. Actually, we're both right. I just watched it. Sissons did not follow Suter to the front of the net, and then Bovillier did not pick Suter up. So I hear what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, that's rough. That's rough. And it's funny how Petey was only on that shift because Miller took a long shift prior to that. So they wanted to roll the wingers, and they put Petey out instead. Yes, and then they end up combining. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's that Canucks penalty with 30-something seconds to go.
Yep.
Which was was it cross-checking?
Yeah.
82 games of the year, yes. Was it cross-checking by playoff standards in a game that you haven't called a single penalty that wasn't coincidental on the Nashville Predators? I don't think so. So Lindholm goes off with 33 seconds to go for that cross-check. The Canucks lock it down. I mean, Silas makes a nice save, and then the rebound goes to the right-hand side of the net if you're facing the net. Tyler Myers sacrifices it all, frankly. I don't know any other way to word that. He puts his body and his future children on the line to make that block, and he does. And then it's not even a perfect block because it sort of pops towards the net. Ian Cole gets the glove on it to keep it away. And then another shot from Yossi goes wide at the point, which you got to hit the net there.
Yeah.
And the Canucks just survive. And that was sort of the thesis of the series, right? It was a lot of survival for the Canucks where, you know, they were the favorite to win this series, but they lose their starting goalie. They lose their second goalie, and they really, you know, game three and game four, they really survived. Game five, they lose. Game six, they survive and score the one goal that Archer Shelov's obviously played unbelievable. So, you know, a really gritty win overall in this series.
It's crazy how we sweep all three games in Nashville, yet we go 1-2 at home. So another thing about that play, Myers play, and someone on one of my shows says he got hit in the Canuts, which was, I thought was pretty funny. That net was wide open, right? You've seen the still shots. You've seen the video.
Yeah, Shelov's had a glove there, Shelov's, and that was it.
And Miller and Cole are doing their best, trying to get over there. In essence, pushing Shelov's into the net. It was so funny. And great point how Yossi missed the net. But it was because Teddy Bluger made an awesome play. He laid out flat. So Yossi had to go over him, and then obviously less accurate. So what was the mood like in Rogers Arena? A, when Lindholm got called for that stupid cross check, and then B, those last 30, I think I know the answer, but tell me about it.
Yeah, that Lindholm penalty, everyone sort of got into, and it was a bit of an oh no mode.
Yeah.
But it was also like, all right, boys, win the faceoff. Like, win the faceoff, get it down the ice. That kills 12 of the 33 seconds, right?
Sure. Sure.
Of course, Nashville sets up with possession, couple of big blocks. No one sat the last 30 seconds. Everyone was on their feet. And then obviously when that final horn went, there was a shot after the horn too.
Yeah, from Forsberg.
And obviously we can't really hear the horn in there because everyone's going crazy. It was really relief. Like that was it. It was relief. And then about 3 seconds after the game ends, the feed cuts and they go to a graphic of Canucks advance to round two.
Okay.
And everyone just goes crazy. It was fantastic.
Did they go back to the feed for the handshakes or no more?
Yeah, they did for the handshakes and everything. Okay, yeah.
That's good. How's the audio? Like
an animation.
How's the audio?
It's fine. It's fine. It's the crowd can drown it out pretty easy though.
Right.
So when the crowd gets into it, you don't hear Shorty anymore. So it was nice going back to the highlights after and sort of rewatching the big moments and actually getting the calls. But yeah, it was quiet enough that we could drown it, which is kind of nice in a way.
Yeah. So Parker, my experience was completely different. You might remember last game of the year, I got to go as a guest and watch basically the Canucks Jets game number 82 in Winnipeg in Rogers Arena. I think it wasn't a test at all because there's like 100 of us in there. So picture the same thing, Jumbotron lower to over hovering above center ice, audio really loud, but it was so loud because there's only 100 of us in here. And even when we cheer, we're not going to do anything, right? So I think they actually turned it down for us because it was just like...
Yeah, that
piercing.
Makes sense.
Yeah, ear piercing. Oh, I got to get to one of those watch parties. That sounds so good.
It's a great time. There's no better place to watch the game. You get the whole atmosphere, the 19,000 fans.
Yeah.
The Canucks survived against Nashville. So we've got Edmonton starting Wednesday. Nice little delayed start, which is great for the Canucks. Obviously, it was dependent on who won that Dallas-Vegas game last night. If Vegas had won, the Canucks would have started on Tuesday. But since Dallas has an arrangement on Wednesday, a concert in town, they have to go Tuesday and they don't want to do both Western Conference games on the same night. So the Canucks go on Wednesday against Edmonton and no 2-day breaks. It is all every other night, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday, every other day. Sportsnet is banking on this thing going to 6 because they want that Saturday night. that big Saturday night game, but this is going to be a series in which the Canucks are underdogs. And it's not that, you know, Edmonton's this, you know, fantastic team. You know, we think they're underdogs. It is consensus. The betting markets have an implied odds around 70-30. The Athletics model had it around 74-26. Money Puck had it at 50-50, but that seems wrong to me based on everything else. And it makes sense. Edmonton has been the best team in the NHL since basically early December.
Wow.
If you pick a time.
So before we preview, I want to ask you one scheduling thing. And by the way, thank you, Fangirl, for acknowledging your membership for 22 months and welcome to Vichy is Fishy. No, also acknowledging for 1 month. So thanks both of you for being loyal members. Okay, Parker, I understand the whole thing. If Denver beats Vegas, if Dallas beats Vegas, then it's on Tuesday in Dallas because Dallas cannot host on Wednesday. That's why Dallas is hosting Tuesday. We're hosting Wednesday. I get that. Okay. But what they must have thought of if Vegas wins and they have to play in Colorado, if Colorado was free on Tuesday, like their arena, why couldn't they just flat out say Central starts on Tuesday? And that's the part I didn't understand. Like, I get the Dallas side.
I think it was to even out the breaks, right? Because that series obviously finished, you know, later. So in theory, you want the Canucks Oilers series to start earlier.
Okay.
And I think they wanted that Canucks Oilers series to have a Saturday night game 3.
I understand.
Which obviously won't be the case. It'll be Sunday, which, look, a Friday night game 2 is going to be, you know, that's going to get a lot of eyeballs.
Yeah.
They've lost their golden goose in Toronto. can we take a quick detour? That Toronto-Boston game 7, where was your mind on that?
Okay. I don't dislike Toronto. I don't dislike Edmonton even. I will at the end of the series. I didn't dislike Nashville. The only team I actually dislike is Calgary, believe it or not. But anyway, I don't even wish misfortune on Toronto fans. Like I think admittedly on one hand, it's kind of funny, but I have some good friends in Toronto, some content creators who I really like. And I, for their sake, I did want Toronto to win. But as soon as it got to overtime, I was rushing home from another venue and then I didn't even get home because it ended so quick. And I couldn't help but say, I'm 0% surprised. I wasn't reveling in it, but I was 0% surprised. You? I think I know what you're going to say.
I was raised as two things. I was raised as you are a Canucks fan first.
Yeah.
And you are a Toronto Maple Leafs hater second.
Wow.
That was how I was raised. And obviously Boston has wronged us more than Toronto.
Yeah.
However, it was just sort of the perfect storm. Toronto finally gets that little bit of hope last year, getting through the first round. And then they're back against their nemesis, Boston. And this could have been a Canucks Blackhawks slay the dragon moment for Toronto. Mm-hmm. And they blew it. Obviously, I mean, what a sick goal by Pasternak and a bad play by Riley. that was how I was raised. And it was funny to me. Obviously, I didn't like seeing Boston win tonight. I wanted Florida. My thought was, hey, whoever even gets through, they're going to get stomped by Florida, which I still think can happen. I'm still taking Florida in six in this round. It was exactly what I wanted to see.
Yeah, my two teams lost. I want Florida and Carolina to win, and they both lost game one. That was... Yeah, we won't stray too far here, but I don't know. Like, is it really Mitch Marner's fault? Because he just got off the bench, so it's not like he could get up to top speed so quickly. You saw Nylander literally coasting with both of his feet on the ice right through the middle. Yeah. It was just a weird play. It was just a weird play and a great play.
That was a true home ice advantage play. That was like knowing your boards, knowing the spot.
Yes.
I think Riley played it pretty bad. I think you gotta just take the body on Pasternak there because he's gonna burn you. There was people like saying, "Oh, Samsonov was too deep in his net." I don't know, man. That was a sweet goal.
What
do you want there? Yeah. You shouldn't let him be in by himself. but just a quick sidetrack there.
I like it. It just shows that we know even a little bit about other stuff too, even though our bread and butter is obviously Canucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think we should talk. You know, do a little bit preview of the Oilers Canucks series. I mean, we can look from the perspective of, oh, the Canucks won all four games in the regular season against the Oilers. I mean, three of those came pretty early when the Oilers were a bit of a mess.
Yep.
The fourth one obviously was the biggest one, the one that decided the Pacific Division. But it was also the one without Connor McDavid, like the best player in the world by far. Yeah. So it's not really a super fair metric. The Oilers just took care of the LA Kings for the third year, where they beat them in seven, and they beat them in six, and they beat them in five, and they made some pretty easy work of the LA Kings. They absolutely tore through the 1-3-1, and if there was any team to get through that 1-3-1, it was the Oilers with their speed.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about 50 goal scorer Zach Hyman. We're talking about, you know, the fastest player of all time in Connor McDavid. We're talking about probably like, let's be real. Edmonton has the number one and probably number three best players in the NHL right now in McDavid and Draisaitl. They've got Evan Bouchard, who, while he lacks on the defensive side, is one of the better offensive defensemen in the NHL. Not to mention Matthias Ekholm, who has been, you know, a solid top four defenseman, especially on the offensive side. But there's holes. There's holes for the Canucks to exploit coming in as the underdog. And I think we should talk about this from a matchup perspective and also talk about it from a sort of man-to-man lineup perspective. And where do the Canucks have the edge? Where do the Oilers have the edge?
No, I'd love to do that. And before we do that, I want to touch on the two nuances really quickly that you mentioned that I think are very important. I do not like Leon Draisaitl. I think he's a baby when it comes to the media. I think I respect he's a very good player, and I probably don't like him because I'm worried that he's going to light us up. But I'll give him credit. I think, you know, Parker, I tell you that I watched the other teams' post-game, pre-game interviews. You know, the coaches are already been very, very, flattering of the Vancouver Canucks, like legitimately. But Draisaitl was good today. They had him for 7.5 minutes, which is probably 7 minutes longer than he wanted. And three different reporters, Parker, it's so funny. Three different reporters tried to get him to talk about the fact that the Canucks swept. Oh, what is it going to be a sweet revenge? Or does that mean you have to play them differently? Blah, blah, blah. And then two of the three times, by the last time, Draisaitl just said, look, I don't know how many times you're going to answer me. I'm going to say the same thing. It doesn't matter to us, and I bet you it doesn't matter to them. So I was really cool that Draisaitl just didn't end it off after, oh, it doesn't matter to us. We're a different team. He said it doesn't matter to them either. Like they're a good team, and it's going to be a great series. So I really like that. So I don't think there's anyone that's pretty mature saying that just because we swept them, we should be the favorites. No one's saying that. So leads me to my second nuance. I love how JT Miller and Quinn Hughes during their interviews have said that they don't feel like they're underdog. That's kind of interesting to me, Parker, because Talk It As It says, yeah, we will embrace the underdog role. No one expected us to be here, blah, blah, blah. But then JT Miller and Quinn Hughes turn around and say, no, I don't think we're the underdog at all. But they're not saying they're the favorite. They're just saying it's going to be two really good teams. So what I've heard, my whole point is I've heard a lot of mutual respect so far. Who knows what happens once the puck drops. But this whole narrative of, yeah, I agree, the 4-0 doesn't mean anything. And the underdog narrative, we'll see how much the Canucks play into it. And I get that the betting markets and every expert, except one so far I've seen, has picked the Oilers to win.
Yeah, history doesn't matter coming into this, right? Like you can look at it and say, like, oh, the Canucks know how to beat Edmonton. I mean, sure, they beat them 4 times the regular season. That's great. But again, 3 of those games were early. And then,
yeah.
You know, Edmonton was bad to start the season. They couldn't figure it out. They fire their coach. And if anything, it's made them stronger, right? They've been the best team in the NHL for the last basically 5-6 months.
Yeah.
And they've got guys who can absolutely exploit this team. But they are a team that has obviously some of the biggest strengths in the league, right? You have the best player in the league. You've got defensemen that can contribute offensively. You have the best power play that maybe we've ever seen in the NHL, to be
awesome.
Frank.
Yeah.
Right. And we're talking about that going against a Canucks team that was the most penalized of any team in the entire first round, giving up 21 power plays to just 13 power plays of their own. Is part of that officiating, maybe not being fantastic. Sure. But that's something the Canucks are gonna have to deal with. If you're giving up 3.5 on average power plays per game, that's at least a goal per game on Edmonton's side, maybe 2, the way they've been playing.
Right.
But there's also some obvious holes, right? You look at the center depth, right? Obviously, you know, McDavid is, I'm assuming, gonna get the JT Miller matchup whenever the Canucks can deem that fit. Then Draisaitl is gonna get the Lindholm matchup whenever the Canucks can make that work. And both of those edges offensively will go to Edmonton. However, the depth is where it gets a little bit interesting, right? Where you get to the Ryan McLeod, Corey Perry line, that's going to be the Elias Pettersson matchup most likely. And if Elias Pettersson can be Elias Pettersson, that's an edge for the Canucks, right? Where those first two lines are going to be an edge for Edmonton. That third line is going to be an edge for Vancouver. And I think on the fourth line side, it's kind of a wash. I mean, who cares at that point?
I agree.
But you look at the defensive side, right? And I think the Canucks have a bit of an edge there defensively. I think Bouchard and Ekholm can be fantastic offensively, but so can Quinn Hughes. But Quinn Hughes is also better defensively than Evan Bouchard. And I think that sort of carries through the defensive lineup. And then the other matchup really is the goaltending, right? Where we talk about Stuart Skinner, a young 25-year-old goaltender who historically in his career has been pretty good, right? 913 in his first year, 914 in his second year, 905 this year when goaltending was bad all around this year. So pretty much league average as a 25-year-old.
Yeah.
And in against the LA Kings, he had a 910 with a 259 goals against average. He was fine. And he is likely going to be against a 23-year-old unproven goaltender who, you know, was obviously fantastic last year in the World Championships and really, really good for the Canucks so far this year. So it's two wild cards in net. It's, you know, forward depth that offensively favors Edmonton while defensively favors Vancouver, and defensively sort of the same thing. Offensively probably is pretty even, but defensively favors Vancouver. There's so many small little advantages that, you know, these teams can take that really, to me, like, special teams is the key. If the Canucks can stay out of the penalty box against, I mean, what was Edmonton's power play against LA? It was 45%, I think, on the power play. And what was their penalty kill? It was perfect. They did not allow a power play goal against. So they were perfect at special teams, essentially, while the Canucks, you know, were obviously fantastic on the penalty kill. But if you go back to the regular season, Edmonton's power play was still fantastic, while Vancouver's penalty kill wasn't as good. So that's going to be a mismatch that the Canucks need to find a way to work around.
Yeah, I love your breakdown. I agree with everything you said. I want to spend a couple minutes on the defense because, yeah, the Ekholm Bouchard pairing kind of has everything that the Hughes Hronek pairing does have, although kind of reverse, right? You'd say that Ekholm is, Hughes is better than Hronek, so the younger guy is better than the older guy, where you'd say right now Ekholm's probably still better than Bouchard, but Bouchard's got a lot of potential. But they both do similar things. You're right. They both can defend, and they can both be great offensive pairings as well. What I found fascinating was when we beat Edmonton 3-1, Parker, at the end of the season, they were making a big deal saying that how Kulak and Desharnais have almost become the second pairing and how Nurse and CeCe have sometimes dropped to third pairing minutes. And Darnell Nurse is making $9.5 million. And I don't know if he's just goofy. I don't know if it's because I always remember his battles with Bo Horvat when Horvat was here. I just don't like Nurse. So I kind of want the Canucks to exploit them a little bit. But so
Nurse is a bit of a dirty player, to be fair.
Yeah. I agree. So all to say, I just think top to bottom, our six defensemen are a tiny bit more solid, especially when they're playing well. You can say that about anyone So I give actually the edge to Vancouver on D. And then when it comes to the goaltending, Parker, tell me if I'm dreaming here. I feel like Shelovs has the demeanor where he gets how big this stage is, but he kind of doesn't get how big the stage is. And to me, that's a good thing. I don't know. Is it too simplistic?
I think that's fair. I think he's just really mature.
Yeah.
Because I remember they were talking about how like he got the call that like, oh, hey, you're going in for game five, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and he was like, okay, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'll go do that. No big deal.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're a 23-year-old kid whose dream it's been his entire life to play in the NHL. You were a 6th-round pick. Like this should be a big stressful moment for him. He's like, there was a national holiday because of me and my country last year. Like what? This is nothing. Like, yeah, it's really interesting. Like offensively, the edge is far and away to Edmonton.
Yeah.
And it's really going to be how the Canucks play defensively because against Nashville, they were really good defensively and really bad offensively to the point where if the Canucks can shut things down and make every game a toss up, every game a 2-1 toss up, they'll have a chance. If every game turns out to be a 6-4 shootout,
we're in trouble.
The Canucks are going to struggle, right? If you're giving up 3-4 power plays a game, I mean, you look at the first round, every single team that won the special teams battle in the first round won the series. Simply, right? And it's a simple metric, right? Like take your power play percentage plus your PK percentage, right? Just to see which team in your matchup was better. Every team that was on the positive side of that won that first round matchup.
Right.
And that's something that the Canucks are, you know, they were phenomenal on the PK in round one. But Edmonton was unbelievable on the power play in round one. Yep. So you're really getting that unmovable object against that unstoppable force in round one that, frankly, concerns me because Edmonton in the entire regular season was unstoppable in the power play. Well, the Canucks were fine on the penalty kill, which for us was a big upgrade. You go back to last year when they were historically bad. And like, 76% on the penalty kill. This is unbelievable. Whereas, you know, they obviously weren't playing Edmonton every night on that penalty kill.
Yeah. I love it. I got one more intangible to throw at you. And you tell me if you think this would be a factor or not. How about Lindholm and Zadorov as ex-Flames? Now I get it. The Calgary Flames played the Edmonton Oilers the same amount of times as the Vancouver Canucks played the Edmonton Oilers per season 4. So it's not like they get to play more because they live in Alberta or they play in Alberta. But over the years, Lindholm certainly matched himself up against McDavid and Draisaitl over the last few years. Zadorov has had a little bit of that Battle of Alberta feel for a couple years. So I just think they're not going to like bring over like a book of secrets where they're going to show all the Canucks coachings. But I do think that there's a confidence and just an experience there, a familiarity that might help the Canucks. But maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I certainly think Lindholm can be an X factor for sure.
I wonder if there's a little bit of an extra gear there, right?
Yeah.
And you think about it from a perspective of, you know, it just that little bit of hatred almost, right? Like they're obviously local rivals. Yep. And same with Zadorov. I could really see, and you know, we're thinking Lindholm's going to be getting the Draisaitl line,
right?
Tough matchup, right? Obviously, and Miller's getting the McDavid line, tougher matchup, right? Those are those are big tasks, but the way this team has been coached all year leads me to believe that, like, hey, they're going to understand the assignment, right?
Right.
They're not
right.
going to be like, all right, hey, we're, you know, I'm Elias Lindholm against the Draisaitl line. I got to go outscore these guys. That's not going to be their job. Their job is going to be go even. If you can go even against the Draisaitl line, and then JT Miller's line goes even against the McDavid line, tall order.
I know where you're going with this.
Tall order.
Yeah.
Then look at where you end up, right? You end up with Elias Pettersson, Ilya Mikheyev, and Nils Höglander against Ryan McLeod, Dylan Holloway, and Corey Perry. And I'm taking that bet every time. And then, you know, even you go to the fourth line, Derek Ryan, Warren Fogel, and Matthias Janmark, you know, that line goes even in there 8 minutes or 9 minutes against the Lafferty and PDG and et cetera. That's where the Canucks can exploit this. But everything has to go right. And that's why the Oilers are big favorites, right? Everything has to go right for the Canucks, because from a pure talent perspective, this Oilers team has, one, been there before. Mm-hmm. That's big, right? And the second part is from a pure skill level. So, yeah, if you can get your top two lines, and I'm calling Lindholm on the top two lines here, to go even against the Oilers' top two lines, and I got to wonder what Knobloch wants to do for the Oilers when they have home ice in games 3 and 4, if they try to, you know, shift that Draisaitl line and try to get them like the Lafferty matchup or something along those lines. It'll be interesting to see. But for the Canucks, you know, they're going to want Miller on McDavid. They're going to want Lindholm on Draisaitl, and they're going to try to get Petey geared up against the Ryan McLeod line. And yeah, if those first two lines can go close to even, you try to get that Pettersson line to build a difference.
Yeah. To answer your question, I know what's going to happen in game 3 in Edmonton. You're going to see a lot, JT Miller, a lot on the ice, a lot for fourth line faceoffs, right? Because you just, at least to start off.
Yeah. And that's something that's nice for the Canucks and the D zone draws. You've got a couple of guys, like, I could very well see them like, hey, you know, we're halfway through a period. We're going to put Miller and Lindholm out at the same time. So one of them can get waved out and the other one can win the draw and immediately skate to the bench. It's going to be interesting. Like, just how, like we saw, especially in game 6, every time the Canucks had a chance to put the lotto line together with a minute to go in the period or less, they did, right? Where it's like, okay, this doesn't impact the other lines because there's no time left. Maybe it gives us a chance to generate some offense, which it didn't really work, frankly. But, there's those little games within the game that are going to be interesting to keep track of.
Right. One more thought, Parker. I don't know. You're pretty good on X, so I don't worry about, like, you winding up on the wrong side of a horrible argument with some Oilers fans. But do you follow any of this narrative? Like, I follow a little bit of it, but I don't worry about it. Like, it's funny. I think I have the bandwidth to engage, but I just don't bother. Like, I actually don't care. But I know a lot of people are already talking about it. A lot of people are talking about it already.
Yeah. I think if we get a little bit more into the series, especially like a Friday night game where it's like, oh, I'll have a couple beers and watch the game, I might get a little, you know.
Okay, I'm gonna get into it a little bit.
But I think I'm just so much harder on my own team that I'm busy. I don't have the, you know, because I sort of see every fan base is the same, right? Everyone's like, oh, like, these fans are the worst. Yeah, it's like every fan base is kind of the same. It's like just people that cheer for a team. So, I mean, obviously there's like the Ryan Whitney stuff going on right now, which I think is hilarious.
You see what, like, Mr. Booth got him?
How yeah, got him. So good. Like, I mean, he's the GOAT. He's the GOAT of Vancouver for a reason. But, like, you know, it's just like, there's stupid Edmonton fans too. Like, it's all over the board. Everyone's got, you know, really dumb fans that are going to be aggressive for no reason.
Totally.
And I, you know, oh, we're going to single them out and, you know, be like, oh, this is the stereotypical Oilers fans. Like, that's not really how it works, but at least we've had electricity for a long time. If we want to go that route, like, it's just pointless.
And Canucks fans, Parker, we didn't even need a playoff series. They Canucks fans are good enough fighting with themselves, right? We don't need another enemy. Like,
oh yeah, you're gonna make riot jokes if we haven't made them 8,000 times in the last 13 years. Like, what are we doing here? Like, everything you can say, we've said to ourselves and worse.
That's so yeah, funny.
It's silly.
Sat and Dan Riccio, did you see this today? They played a little clip where they're, I guess one of the Edmonton reporters was one of the Edmonton radio shows, they're making fun of Quinn Hughes, how they should just body him and make him look sad, and why does he always look like he's gonna cry? And they're like, have you seen McDavid? Like
yeah, and Nashville tried that, and to be fair, Nashville sort of succeeded, right? They took
the body. I was scared a lot,
and he played worse because of it. But then you know he survived it, I think. And I think he'll be good for round two. We missed, by the way, Carol with
20
gifted memberships back in the chat. So too many people to list because there's 20 of you. But if you received a membership from Carol gifting.
Yes.
Say thank you.
Thank you, Carol. And it's funny. That's awesome, Carol. Thank you for your support as us individually and together. And Jason, we've set our Canucks After Dark membership at a tiny bit lower than that greedy Canuck Clay guy, but it's still very, very, very generous. Yeah. Very generous. Thank you, Carol.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, this is going to be really, really interesting. Obviously, if you aren't aware, schedule Wednesday is game one, Wednesday, Friday, two games at home, Sunday, Tuesday in Edmonton, Thursday back here, Saturday in Edmonton, and Monday for game seven, which would be the 20th of May. So this is going to be, look, by every metric, the Canucks are the underdogs, which no pressure. Really, right? Like everyone expects the Oilers to win this series. But I think the Canucks have a play style that can add a little bit of randomness to it, right? Play a defensive game, force things to be, 2-1 instead of 6-4. And, the games might go your way. And look, the real wild card to me is one for the Canucks staying out of the box, as we've mentioned. The second one is so obviously going to be goaltending. Because Stuart Skinner is going to be decent. I think we know, right? He's going to be around 900, 905. He'll be fine.
But he won't steal the series.
He's probably not going to steal a series. He might steal a game, but I think the Canucks goaltenders can steal a game too.
Yeah.
But I don't think Will they jump back to Casey DeSmith, the vet, where, again, I feel like Casey DeSmith's in a similar boat of Stuart Skinner. You know what you're going to get. It's going to be around 900. It'll be fine. He might steal you a game. He's not going to steal you the series. Whereas you get to this little bit of an unknown in Artur Shelov's. And, they made a good point on the morning show this morning saying, like, hey, this is Jim Rutherford's cup of tea, right? Whether it's Cam Ward going on a run as a fairly unknown goaltender in 2006, or it's Matt Murray going on a run instead of Marc-Andre Fleury as a fairly unknown quantity back whenever that was, 8-9 years ago. It's something that this team is or this management group has done before. Obviously, they don't get a say. Ian Clark does for the most part, and Rick Tocchet. But if Artur Shelov's is what we've seen from the last series and what we saw in the World Championships in Latvia, he hasn't really given us any reason to doubt him. Mm-hmm. He could be a guy to steal a game or two.
Just love how calm he is in net. He's not as big as Demko, but he's bigger than I expected. And you can tell he's a good student. I'm sure Clark has worked wonders with him. But I'm with you, man. And I last thing I'll say about Shelov's, I kind of giggle when Parker, he says, when they ask him, hey, so have you ever experienced anything like this before? Were you ready for the amount of pressure? And he goes, well, I did, we won the bronze medal. I was in World Championships. Respectfully, though, I don't think that's the same. I just don't.
Well, that's funny.
It wasn't his home. Yeah.
If you're Canadian, it's not the same.
Yeah. Good point.
Right? Like if you're a Canadian goaltender, your number one goal is Stanley Cup. Number two is Olympic gold. World Championships is a bit down the line. World Championships might be lower than World Juniors in Canada, right? Whereas in Latvia, a team that's never medaled in the World Championships ever, right? That's another level, right? In Europe.
That's fair.
So I wonder if that does hold a bit of a higher standard than it does here.
That's a great point. My snobbiness just so through there. Yeah, for sure.
All right, folks, we got about 5-6 minutes to go here. By the way, there are 750 of you watching in total, but 200 on the YouTube side, another 550-ish on the Twitter side. So thank you all for joining. Now is a great time. If you have any questions that you'd like us to answer, get those in. We'll spend the next 5 to 10 minutes or so answering those. So yeah, get those in. We'll start with Peter saying, Petey hasn't been hood ready. I think you mean maybe good for a while.
No, he likes to talk about players being in the hood. It's just his thing.
All right, fair enough. Petey hasn't been hood ready for a while he's looked better the last two games. What do you guys think is the best way to get Petey going? Do you think he's the biggest X factor for the Canucks? I'll turn to you first.
I think he is an X factor, but I agree, Parker, with what we've talked about. I actually think bigger X factors are special teams and goaltending, but Petey is. We got to get him. We're not going to win this series if Petey isn't going. I know there's a lot of speculation, maybe still a wrist or something in his arms or whatever. That's just not a lot of shooting power. Some have said groin. I just think, I kind of think that he as cerebral as we think he is, I do think that pressure and big moments get to him. And I'm hoping that maybe the first series kind of got to him the moment and that he's going to start to settle down a bit, maybe a little naive, but that's what I think.
I think that's fair. I think it's been a lot of mental. Look, in the first series, you know, it was something that we talked about going into the series or the series against Nashville, that was the Canucks' edge, was the center depth, right? Mm. And that's sort of the case here, right? Top two, Edmonton, you know, obviously has the edge in McDavid and Draisaitl.
Yes.
The third line, we're now getting to Pettersson versus Ryan McLeod.
Yeah.
That should be an opportunity for Elias Pettersson to run away with his ice time, right? We should be seeing numbers like the Suter Miller Besser line had analytically when his line's on the ice against McLeod, Holloway, and Perry. But again, we said that against Nashville too. So if he can step up to that moment and dominate his 16 to 18 minutes of 5-on-5 ice time, that would be a huge edge for the Canucks in that route, or at least balance out the McDavid Draisaitl edge during the other 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I agree, trying to help my brother out. How can I stream the games while in Europe? A couple of sites, but I don't know if they work. I know NHL66.ir used to be a thing.
Not that we'd ever condone piracy, but
I heard it was a thing. Yeah, maybe I should. Sorry, I don't know what I was thinking there. And then I may have heard of a site called On Hockey, but every time I used to use it back in the day, not recently, I felt like I was putting a virus onto my computer. So
you can get a Sportsnet subscription and VPN to Canada or something like that.
That's price player.
That's like the, even then it's a little iffy, but I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah. Good luck, Alex. Taylor, as if we're lying. How do we truly feel? We love you, Taylor. I'm going Canucks in 7. My head says Edmonton in 6, and that's what I was predicting, Parker, all the way up until game 7. And then after I saw what the Canucks did, game 6 against Nashville, I'm like, no, I got to get behind this team completely, not hedging where I want them to win, but I'm going to predict something else. So I'm going all out. I'm saying Canucks in 7. I don't know if it's going to get there, but that's what I'm saying.
If I was putting money on it and you gave me 50-50 odds to pick a team, I would pick Edmonton.
Yeah.
At the current money, which is 70-30-ish, I probably take Vancouver because I probably see it more as 60-40, 55-45, somewhere in there. Call it 57-43. Either way, I think Edmonton has an edge. I think it's a little over-exaggerated. But I just hope it's good. I hope the Canucks win. But if the Canucks win this series, it's not going to be in 4 or 5 games.
Yeah.
Right. This thing is going to have to go the distance.
So betting odds notwithstanding, percentage notwithstanding, if we're just having a fun little, which we didn't do this year, predict the bracket or predict the thing. I'm going to say Canucks in 7. What are you going to say?
I probably would have taken Edmonton in 6.
Yeah.
But obviously, if the Canucks have any chance, it's going to be in 7. And I will, you know, obviously I'm rooting for the Canucks more than anything.
So very quickly, Dallas, Colorado. Very quickly.
I like Dallas here. I think Dallas is sneaky dangerous. They keep getting these guys just coming out of nowhere, right? Whether it was, you know, Logan Stankoven late in the season, Wyatt Johnson's been unbelievable for them. Watching game seven between Dallas and Vegas, and watching specifically Jake Oettinger, he was unbelievable last night. He was there were so many shots from the point which had a perfect screen that he just gloved down as if it was nothing, as if he saw it all the way. He has remarkable vision that I think gives them an edge here, whereas Colorado's goaltending does not sit well with me.
So I'm going Dallas in six. What are you doing?
I'd be around the same.
Okay. Florida, Boston.
I would have taken Florida in five going into the series. Just I genuinely thought whoever gets through that Toronto Boston series, Florida is going to be a remarkable favorite. Obviously, they got shelled tonight by Boston. I think they had the shot edge, though. I wonder what from a natural stat trick perspective, and I can pull that up really. Let's just see what money puck had. Obviously, Boston won 5-1. The deserved to win-o-meter was around, it's going through about 56% in favor of Florida. So a pretty even game. Florida looked to have a little bit more traffic in front. But of course, you know, the game went Boston's way. I still am leaning Florida in six or seven.
Yeah, me too.
But of course, you know, Boston took game one.
Yeah. And I know this is going to be tough. I'm going Carolina in seven. I just like them more than the Rangers.
This is interesting to me because, like, the Rangers have everything going for them. They won the President's Trophy. Yeah. You give them the weakest opponent possible, a team that shouldn't have even been in the playoffs in the Washington Capitals, and they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They just took care of them. They put them. They just pushed them out of the way as if it was nothing. The Canes have been good for a while. I'll take the Rangers in seven.
Okay. There you go. Some informal predictions. Let's do a couple more. Do you think Evan Bouchard will be a major player for the Oilers aside from McDavid and Draisaitl? What do you say?
Offensively, I think so. He's really good at getting the puck through. He has more hard shots than anyone through the first round. I think there was a stat that he's something like twice as many 90-plus mile-an-hour shots on goal in the first round than anyone else. So he gets pucks through, and he gets them through hard. Which I think the Canucks have handled pretty well throughout the first round. You know, there wasn't a lot of point shots getting through. Obviously, that one tip on Casey DeSmith in his first start. But that was a bit of a weird one. I think he'll be a major player, but I think he has to be for the Oilers to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. GLS says, should Tocchet stop babying Petey and call him out, even start yelling him at the bench? GLS, that's not Tocchet style. I think we know that. He will certainly have no problem talking to any player, not just Petey, before, after, during a practice, pulling them aside. He's not afraid to subtly say to Petey, he's got to move his feet and kind of calm out that way. But I think that's the most you're going to see.
Yeah, Rick Tocchet's really earned the benefit of the doubt, right? Like, I whatever he does is fine by me. I think he knows these players really well, right? Including, you know, I really look at JT Miller as an example of a guy who he's really put on the right track from a leadership perspective. I think it's sort of the same way with Elias Pettersson, where he knows what gets Petey going. And I think he should stick with that. If he doesn't think Pettersson responds to a more upfront, like calling him out and yelling at him on the bench, then why would he do that, right? To satisfy us, that's not important.
Yeah. By the way, we just started off a nice little conversation about how to stream games. some good suggestions in there for anyone else who wants to check it out. We won't repeat them.
Yeah, we don't vocally condone piracy, but do what you got to do.
I like this question a lot. Do you put any stock into rest versus rust for game one? It'll be over 7 days since the Oilers last played. Not Parker, I'll just say, all the players say the exact same thing. They'd rather be playing, but at this time of the year, the extra day is really nice, or the extra few days is nice to recoup from any lingering injuries.
If there's any chance it gets Demko back in this round, which I don't think it does, then sure.
Great point.
But like, look, both teams had some pretty good rest. I think 3 or 4 days is probably perfect.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Canucks went longer than the Oilers went even longer.
Yeah.
I don't really see that playing in.
Yep, me neither. It's not like guys are going to forget how to play or how to forget. All they need is, that's why they fill that time with a couple of days off, but then one or two good hard practices.
They have practices. Yeah. They have the warm-up for the game. They'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm with you. Wow, this is exciting, man. We're actually going to be, next show, next Monday, will be a day after game three. Wow. Yeah.
So we're guaranteed one more show at the very least. And hopefully two, and hopefully a bunch more.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Obviously, the Canucks were big favorites against Nashville. Going into this Edmonton series, they're underdogs. It's a new experience for the Canucks. And the Canucks were kind of underdogs after Demko went down, right? In some ways, at least probably on a per game basis. It's a fun spot to be.
I think...
And just an overall question for you. If the Canucks get knocked out in this round, is this season a success to you?
Now it is. Unless they like lose 8-0 for four in a row. But it is. Truly, Parker, if they lost to Nashville, I would have actually said disappointment. You say, well, Clay, what the heck? No one expects them to win the Pacific. I know, but once you're allowed to change expectations too. I think we've talked about this. But I think, and this isn't a verbal free roll. So if the Canucks lose, I can say, oh, I got it right, even though they're out. No. I do think if they play a good series and lose to Edmonton, there's no shame in losing to Edmonton. We're in the final eight. All eight teams are really good. You could argue that each of them has some sort of semblance of a chance of winning the cup. So yeah, even if we lose the series, I would say it was a relatively successful season for sure.
Yeah. And look, this Canucks team has made the top eight. That's fantastic. I don't think many people saw, said, hey, the Canucks make the second round this year. We would have taken that. Yeah. I think it's tough to win when you haven't been there before, right? Mm-hmm. You look at the team that was here in 2020. There's a few guys there, right? Besser, Hughes, Demko, Miller, Pettersson. But from an overall perspective, this team hasn't been in a playoff series in 4 years and hasn't been in a real playoff series, frankly, right? It was the bubble.
Yeah.
How many teams win it all in their first shot? Not many. It's tough, right? If the Canucks can find a way to get through Edmonton, then it's on. Then we're really on like, okay, now you got to get through either Dallas or Colorado, which if you can get through Edmonton, I think you can, as long as you're relatively unscathed. And then you've got the Rangers or Florida or Carolina to win the whole thing.
Yeah.
This is a big round for the Canucks. And I think... the first two games, I think if you get through game two in a 1-1 split, we start looking at, all right, hey, this team can win a game. This team can win a series. We start to get from that 74-25 more to a 60-40, 55-45, and then it's showtime.
Yep. And if we win the first two, oh, man. Well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Absolutely. Folks, if you enjoyed the show tonight, the 850 of you here, only about 200 of you are on the YouTube side. So if you missed any part of the show, you can go over to youtube.com/CanucksAfterDark and find it there. And we wind back to the beginning. It'll also be on your favorite podcast platform in a matter of 15 to 20 minutes. Just search Canucks After Dark, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. We are obviously here every Monday night at 10 p.m. Clay, any parting words this Monday night?
I think we covered it all. Go Canucks, go.
Yeah, that's all we can hope for. Let's see how deep we can take them. We're talking about Canucks hockey in May. That's pretty good. That's new for us in year three here, or whatever it is. I don't even know anymore. I guess it's kind of year four. Because have we finished 3 years of this? Either way. Year four. Thank you all for joining. Hit the like button while you're here. Make sure to subscribe. You can find me on Twitter, Parker's Pucks, Clay at Canuck Clay. Same things on YouTube. Have a good night. We will see you next week.